Welcome to 10 on Tech. This show is a production of Actual Tech Media. We develop content for IT professionals across the globe. Keep an eye out for our megacast events, webinars, books, and more. Each episode, we spend 10 minutes with an interesting IT influencer, bringing you up to speed in a short amount of time.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of 10 on Tech. I'm excited to introduce you to our special guest today, but first of all, I'm James Green with Actual Tech Media. You can find me on Twitter at JD Green, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Davis. Hey, David.
Hey, James.
You can find David on Twitter at David M. Davis, and we blog over at actualtech.io. So stop by there and read what we've been thinking lately. Today, we have the distinct honor of being joined by Mitchell Hashimoto. He is at Mitchell H. on Twitter. And you may have heard of Mitchell and the products that they're working on over at HashiCorp, like Vagrant, Packer, Terraform, Console, all kinds of sweet stuff. I have written about the Vagrant specifically a little bit in the past, and David and I talk about this stuff from time to time. So we're really excited to ask Mitchell some questions about it and dig in. So Mitchell, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, the first question I wanted to ask you is just, as you're leading this company, you've obviously got a lot of interesting thoughts around where software development is headed and how things can and need to change. But I'd like to look back a little bit. How did you get to thinking about this space, and what led you to working on these tools to help around software development?
So I think like most things, I would say, in almost anybody's life, I guess the way I got here was could kind of be chalked up to an accident or unintended, I guess. I was I've always liked computers and got into programming at a young age, and what got me into the field I'm in particularly is my passion for automation. So I've ever since I started programming, like the reason I got into it was to automate anything and everything. It's sort of I like computers doing tasks for me so that I don't have to do them, and I could focus on, you know, problem solving and other things. And one of the problems that I got into was sort of just automating the setup of websites, I guess, in some form. So one of the first failed businesses I ever tried to do was in high school, and it was a website where you would sign up and I would set up community forum software for you. But I didn't want to do that manually. There was companies that did it manually. What I wanted was you to sign up, and in, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or something, I emailed you and everything was set up for you. And I was in high school, so I didn't have the money to have servers or anything. So what I wanted to do was make it so after you signed up and paid, I would go out and like buy the things and set it up, and I wanted it all to be automated. So that's sort of like my first foray, I guess, into the category. And then it just kept going from there, and turns out, you know, I learned about DevOps and that sort of space, and I'm, you know, I guess 10, 15 years later, I'm still automating infrastructure.
Very cool, Mitchell. I love those kind of stories about, you know, how people got started, and that's a really cool story that I can kind of relate to. So tell me about, you know, I mean, the data center today, it's changing. I mean, I think that's no secret, but to me, it's changing faster than ever before, you know, containers and cloud and all these things. So from your unique perspective, what would you say is kind of the state of the data center today?
I think the most obvious thing about the state of the data center is that data center as a word is quickly becoming a more and more abstract concept. So, you know, a data center used to be a physical site where you could point to a hole in the wall and say, you know, that's where we connect to the internet. And of course, those still exist. But the way people use the word data center today more and more just reflects, you know, the technology we need to run our applications, basically. And that could be a cloud, that could be containers, all sorts of things. And there's sort of a lot going on there. I think you hit on a lot. I think cloud is probably the biggest trend that's forcing everything else. I think that cloud's a big reason why we're taking a refreshed look at automation, why we're taking a refreshed look at security, at even things like containers. You know, containers work great on physical machines, but I think that sort of the speed and agility the cloud gives you really makes containers even more attractive. So I think that's the the underlying trend is cloud. Obviously, that's a lot more mature. And then that's giving rise to these newer trends above it.
That's a really interesting thought about just how the data center, it's becoming super abstract. I think about that a lot, but I haven't been able to put that as eloquently as you just did. I like that. So at HashiCorp, you work on a lot of projects at this point. I don't
Yeah.
how many is it?
Seven open source projects and then a few enterprise products too.
Yeah, wow, cool. Of those, which one are you working on right now that you're the most excited about?
I'm biased. So right now I'm working full time, almost full time, as much as full time as sort of a founder of a company could get on the Terraform project. But I'm also excited about Vault and Nomad and some other projects, but I'm biased because day in, day out, I spend the most time with Terraform. And so I would say Terraform's kind of the neatest to me.
Well, we're infrastructure people, and a lot of our audience is too. Could you just talk a little bit about Terraform for a minute?
Yes, of course. So Terraform is a tool for automating the creation of your data center. And I use data center there in the abstract term. So basically, everything you need to run your application from load balancers to DNS records to actual servers, networking rules. The idea is that you don't have infrastructure. You run Terraform apply, which is one command, and then wait, hopefully, a few minutes, 10 minutes, however long it takes. And then at the end of it, without you doing any more work, you have a complete, production-ready infrastructure.
That sounds almost too good to be true. I mean, tell us a little bit more about the details. I mean, this infrastructure is automated
Sure.
for novices out there. Is it running in AWS or what is this data center that's
Yeah.
been created?
Yeah. So for Terraform, you have to tell it what to create. It's not magic. So it works with every major cloud provider. It also works on physical machines. And you say what you want. And I think that's the big difference with Terraform is you say what you want, not how you want it. So how you want to get it in particular. So it's sort of a declarative tool. So you only declare the target state no matter where you are. So say you have three servers running right now and a load balancer and a firewall. And what you want instead is seven servers and you want this other port opened on the firewall. Instead of saying spin up four servers for me and then modify this existing firewall to add this rule, what you say is just what I said previously, which is I want a total of seven servers and I want the firewall to look like this. And Terraform makes that a reality. It looks at what you have, determines what it needs to do to make that a reality, and just does that.
A lot of people who are in the automation space right now are talking about declarative state kind of tools. I'm not sure I know the answer to this, but is there still a place for more of a imperative sort of whatever it is, provisioning tools or whatever we're talking about? Is there still a place for that, or is declarative kind of the future?
I think declarative is the future, but I was just I don't have a strong conclusion to this, and so this is more of like a thought experiment I've been going forward with, and I could be totally wrong, but I sort of have this feeling that to actually make something declarative, we need to become complete experts at that category. Like creating an imperative tool is much easier because you just got to create the individual steps and you put the burden of complexity on the user. Like the user puts those steps together to make something work. Declarative is just a much bigger problem for any problem it's trying to solve, which is that for any possible current state of the world, that tool must be able to determine the steps to get to any possible target state of the world. That's just a huge, I guess, generic problem. And so when I look back, I sort of think that even with like Terraform and stuff, like Terraform's doing what people have been doing imperatively for so long that we're experts and we know how to do it now. And because we're experts, we could actually design a tool that does it very generally.
Very cool. Very cool. So you've created all these cool tools, these automation tools. How have you seen these tools in place at real companies? How have they transformed the life of real IT admins or organizations?
I think for us as for our tools as a I guess common theme between all of them, the biggest thing I've heard is just how much more enjoyable it's made people's jobs. I think that it's fun when you get to focus on getting things done versus sort of like the details of how to get it done. I guess it's, you know, there, I guess put another way, you know, one of the things that motivated me to make these tools, and I think this is the problem that they solve in everyday life for people, is that I was personally just frustrated doing these, you know, checklist tasks that I thought a computer could do, and it took up so much of my time that the time I actually could spend doing creative, fun problem solving was so small. But because these tools that we're creating are automated, I think it's unlocking for a lot of people a lot more time to work on the new problems and the fun problems versus the problems we know the solution to, and someone somewhere just has to do, you know, the work to get it done.
Sure. So in my mind, DevOps as a paradigm is kind of getting past the buzzword stage into the point where it's like, okay, people really need to start learning how they're going to approach this and picking up some relevant skills so that they can work together. What would your recommendation be for somebody who's looking into the space where HashiCorp operates as far as picking up some new skills and staying relevant as the data center evolves the way that we're seeing it evolve?
Yeah, I think there's two aspects of DevOps, which is the cultural side and the technical side. And I think from like a getting started standpoint, the best thing to do is actually kind of to ignore the cultural side, just to get going, just to understand what's happening, and just start picking up some tools that are, I guess, you know, tagged or labeled as DevOps tools. So pretty much anything we make, but there's a bunch of other stuff out there too. Just start using them and figuring out where they solve problems for you, or which ones do actually solve problems for you. Not all of them will. Once you get there, then it becomes a bigger problem of like, okay, how do we use this tool with a team? How does like a real company deliver software with this tool? And that's when you start getting more into the, like, the cultural aspect of things.
It's really interesting that you say that, because there's so much preaching about how DevOps is not a tool, it's a cultural paradigm, and
it is.
So
it
on.
Totally
and,
is.
Yeah, and that's true. But I actually tend to really agree with you that in a lot of cases we're dealing with some significant operational issues and or technical debt, and picking up a tool that can really take some things off your plate then can give you a little more room to breathe while you figure out how to do the cultural thing. So I really like that approach.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. If you want to change your organization maybe one day with DevOps, you don't start by just walking into the CIO and saying, hey, let's put in DevOps. First, you need to get some skills around it. You need to educate yourself, be comfortable. And so I think that's very smart advice. So if you were to get out your crystal ball, Mitchell, and look to the future, where do you see things evolving or changing? What should our audience be looking out for?
I think the biggest, this is already sort of happening. So this isn't some like crazy prediction. It's sort of something I'm already seeing. But I think the biggest change I've seen in the past, you know, 6 to 12 months that will, I believe, continue for the next probably couple of years is a huge shift to a new way of doing security and the tools surrounding that. So this is, again, sort of another technical plus cultural change. And we have Vault, which is playing a big part in that. But I think we timed Vault and we're lucky. I don't think Vault is the cause of any of this. I think Vault's riding a wave that would have come anyways.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. As you say that, I'm thinking about there's just so many things to stay on top of as things are growing so much faster. And for a person like you who's really at the cutting edge of what we're doing in the data center right now, I imagine it's really important for you to keep growing and keep learning. And some of that comes from talking to customers and from the stuff that you're building. But I'm just curious, how do you accomplish that intentionally? How do you make sure that you're still growing and learning as opposed to just getting buried in the work?
Yeah, it's actually hard. That's a difficult problem as I've shifted from being a primary consumer of our tools to basically a primary just creator of tools. And the way I usually keep up is just trying everything, thinking a lot about sort of how it fits in. And then periodically, this is the most time-consuming thing. Like the beginning of this year, I actually just like started a completely unrelated that I never launched like side project that used a bunch of tools just so that I could go through the full development to production sort of life cycle from scratch and figure out how everything fits and what sucks and what's really great and that sort of stuff. And I can't do that very often, but that was really educational. And I think it's hard. I mean, I think it's really hard, but like you said, it's sort of something I have to do to keep on top of things.
Did you anticipate that when you started out that it would be a dummy project just for the sake of learning, or did you just find out through the process of building it and everything that it wasn't necessarily going to be viable?
Oh, no, it was always supposed to be a dummy project. So one of my, it was actually like a New Year's resolution of mine. Like one of my New Year's resolutions was to actually build something new and use all these new tools as an educational experience. So it was born as a educational thing.
That's very awesome. Is any of that available, posted, or documented somewhere where people can learn from your educational experience?
No, it's actually not. I just never launched it or anything. So it's it's sitting around somewhere.
Well, it sounds like something I'd like to try myself is download a number of your different tools and build something. I think that's the best way to learn something is to do it, you know. So that's something I'm going to take on myself. So Mitchell, if we move here from kind of the more technical questions into a couple of the more just personal questions, the next question here I want to ask you is, what's the last thing that you've read or watched that you really enjoyed? Could be technical, could be just something you found personally enjoyable.
Yeah. The last thing I read or watched, I guess, I haven't read a lot recently, which is really unfortunate. I usually read quite a bit, but watched, I guess. I really enjoy Planet Earth right now, the new Planet Earth 2, I guess it's called. I watch that every week, and it's just, I think it, I just enjoy it just because it's different from what I do, and it just makes me realize like how big the world is. I think it's easy with, especially like Silicon Valley's like little bubble, I think it's easy to sort of forget how little we all really are.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and how insignificant seems a little bit aggressive of a word, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
in the grand scheme of things, what we spend all day doing and hustling, seeing especially nature stuff makes me think the same thing.
Yep.
So help us learn a little bit just from your experience and maybe from a mistake that you've made or a decision that you have made that in hindsight maybe wasn't so good. What's something that you've done or tried that you would actually not recommend to someone else?
A mistake I made and then I flipped it was not going sort of all in sort of on an idea that I had. I think especially if you're young, there's relatively little risk in any sort of sense, financial or professional or anything really, to really, if there's something you like, to just sort of go all in on it. And most people, I guess, don't really know that it took, Vagrant, my first project, it took it about a year before it was actually, by any measure, pretty much successful. And in that first year, it was very much not used by anyone, not used by many people, not a lot of downloads, any of that. And I sort of considered it like a failure. And it's only when I looked back that the reason it was a failure for that first year was really that I didn't try hard enough, basically, to market it. I didn't try hard enough to talk to people about why they would or wouldn't use it. And I thought that I could just sort of do this like minimum set of work, publish it and people would come. But I really needed to like just go much deeper into and committing to make it successful. And sort of once I started doing that, it took off. So I think that, the one thing I wouldn't recommend is not giving it your all.
So to paraphrase your experience there, if you're being half-hearted, there's a decent chance you won't succeed. And if it's going to succeed, you got to put everything into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I would say it's not a linear scale, right? Like if you put in 50%, you're not going to get 50% out. You might get only like 5% out. But if you put in, 90%, you might actually get a lot more out of it.
Sure. Cool. All right. Well, last question, and then we'll wrap it up here. If somebody came to you and said, look, I've been watching what you're doing and it's really impressive and I admire all the cool stuff that you've done. I'm looking to do cool things in my life. This could be technical or not at all technical, and I'm actually trying to get more at things that aren't. But somebody said something like that to you and said, just tell me one piece of advice that would improve my life. What would you offer to them?
I would tell them to find the general category of things you love to do and learn the surface level of everything in it. So try everything. So if you're into, I don't know, extreme sports, then try a lot of extreme sports. And, you know, if for me, like I was into sort of computers and programming. So, you know, build a front end app, build a back end app, build a mobile app, build, you know, everything, just to give you a lay of the land. Because I think that the sort of advice I give people is like, you don't know what you're going to be really, really special at until you happen to do it. Like you can't know unless you happen to do it. And so you just, especially when you're young, just try everything.
I think that's fantastic advice. I have one question. How are you going to know? How did you know when you kind of started to specialize in an area that was the thing? If I go try a ton of extreme sports, how am I going to know that it's, cliff jumping that is the thing that I love?
Yeah, I think it's the one, for me, it was the one I just kept coming back to. There was never a singular moment where I was like, this is the thing. It's just sort of, when I look back now, you know, hindsight, there's clearly a pattern where I always came back to the same category of thing.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. I mean, especially for, it's great advice for everybody, no matter what age you are. You know, I think some people are lucky to find their passion super early. Like I was fortunate to just love computers in, you know, fifth grade or whatever grade it was, and just want to do it every day forever. But other people, like you said, they don't know what they're good at or passionate about. And so it's important to try different things and find the thing that you love. So this has been really great, Mitchell. We really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the 10 on Tech podcast. For more helpful content, check out our blog at www.actualtech.io.